be asked if we've done to remove it yet, but just highlighted there as an option for the committee at the time when she was in want to keep it.
You recall the discussion on this one is, this is a judicial complaints committee. One of the things that we've thought of establishing is an autonomous flexible committee, that firstly, this is the one where the complaint will be lodged, in other words, received. Then the categorization will be done, whether it's a serious, not so serious, very serious kind of allegation. If it's a not so serious one, the Chief Justice or whoever chairs in his place will hand it to the head of the court concerned, and they'll make a finding. If that head of court feels that, look, it's frivolous, it's stupid, it's whatever, then they're going to dismiss the charge and give reasons for it. If it turns out to be a little more serious, then the recommendation will come, look, that we think that this must be dealt with in terms of the, because the possible punishment, the possible sanction is in some case, or likewise, it's a very serious matter, it should go to, but clearly what you envisage for this committee is something a little more flexible in terms of its procedures and so on. And what you don't want to see happening is if you have the procedures determined in the Gazette and so on, you're going to start getting appeals on the procedure already at this stage. When in fact the problem you've got set out to this for a very detailed procedures and so on, and to name the JSC and the tribunal's procedures have to be dictated. So my feeling was that on this particular, and I think our feeling when I say our, referring to Mr. Zananda as well, that we shouldn't have this thing that says you must stipulate the procedure of the Judicial Complaints Committee in the Gazette, because this is meant to be something that is a little more kind of flexible and movable is really the issue. So that, you know, you don't wait for 15 years as we have in some instances and complaints are still not dealt with. So my feeling is to take that one out. But it's really up to the committee to comment and to say when it's practicing. Just the option C. You see in the highlighted part on page 7? So all it is it says the minister must by notice in the Gazette make known the particulars of the procedure, including subsequent amendments which the committee has determined in terms of 2A. It says that the committee must determine its own procedure itself. But then we say, put it in the Gazette, let everybody know about it, because that's really the idea, is that people can challenge it and not follow them. I mean, you really want to, this is your initial stage. It's not where you're going to put in a tribunal. I can't buy myself the other way. So can we take it up?
Yeah.
Agreed. Thanks very much. Unanimous. Thank you, Mr. Delanda. I see a victorious smile on your face. I hope you're going to convey it to the powers that be in the same way, with a smile on your face. Okay. All right. Next, Mr.
Delanda. Then in clause section 11, the new section 11. It's not really changed anything. All we've done there is that part adversely affects the image or reputation, that's just been split. It used to be in one, now it's a separate item. And the rest is just consequential renumbering. On the next page.
Mr. Delport has got things. I'm just wondering, should we go through some of those smaller changes and come back to this, because it's going to need some discussion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that, Dr. Delport. Oh, do you need to run? Okay. The come back to this one. Sorry, you were saying something is reading differently. Just point out to me what it is. Adversely affect the image. That's the same split. Okay, that's fine. Remember we had that discussion about the 1 week split from the other, and that's all that is. But we come back to section 11.
And on the next page, see the same section too. So those words to be informed of have been substituted for perceived. That was requested by the committee. A wrong cross reference to instead of C, and then has been granted instead of are granted.
Okay. Technical stuff, happy with that?
And the same, the next up clause, the same thing, including any conditions attached to any application granted. That's also wrong.
You were very upset about the issue.
Well, I just made it for your attention.
Okay. I know you don't get upset. Your plate changes, Helen, and that's the difference.
You can't tell that, of course. Well, I'm checking unchanged T. I'm checking right at the end. Right at the end of 13, there's just National Assembly being substituted for Parliament. And that's in sub-clause 6.
Hang on a second, you're on 13, eh?
17, on page 10, Chair. There's sub-clauses 7 and 8. Each time we substitute Parliament with National Assembly. I will have to explain that.
This is the regulation for approval. Deals with this. And I know our argument was that we don't really have a procedure to work out the finer details of any dispute that arises between the two houses when it comes to subordinate legislation. The question is that Parliament even have a procedure to only deal with something in the national state. Let's only deal with it. We'll just check that. But okay, for the time being, I think you've got our views on the matter. I'm going to look and see. If it comes back at the later stage, we can always see what it is. Okay?
We'll check in the next page, of course, in section 14, which is page 11. B, we've omitted the word as prescribed, the affirmed statement as prescribed. That's also in line with what this committee requested.
I think we discussed this already, remember? Okay.
15 is unchanged. I read most of the poll. I'll check with your leave. I'll discuss it. Where I see this in change. That's the next change on page 14. Right at the bottom. Just a cross reference being corrected there.
Just a minute for me. 14 cross reference.
New section 18 on page 14 of the book.
Oh, page 14. Sorry, I'm looking at the section 14.
Page 14 of the book.
Okay, yes, I see it now.
That's the correction. The next page, similarly, there are two cross references being affected there. And then that whole C, I see it being omitted.
In the event what is this meeting? This is the appeal.
That is considered the appeal.
Yeah, now I can hear the Chief Justice not do that kind of thing. Is there where's that one where it says that the Chief Justice, in the event of the absence of the chairperson to preside, the chairperson must appoint an acting chairperson from amongst the members which is presiding that appeal. And then the Chief Justice, if there's any member that's unavailable to sit in that appeal, the Chief Justice then appoints that member.
That provision
is being
omitted
here.
That's the one in the margin.
So this one is covered. This is covered by that sub B in 2. Shouldn't it be the Chief Justice as opposed to the chairperson?
Chairperson is the Chief Justice.
Except if he delegates his functions completely to another chair. Sorry, Mr. Yudas.
No, I was saying it's the same person.
Yeah, but you see, we remember we changed the construct of that thing for a reason. Because we anticipated that he was going to delegate his chairpersonship to somebody else. And the question is, should the chairperson then appoint a new chairperson, or should it be the Chief Justice?
I think it
should be the Chief Justice. I think we're all envisaging it's the same person. It's just a technical issue of whether the chairperson under that circumstance hasn't also been delegated that authority to then also appoint somebody else as the chairperson. So Mr. Delanda, can you change that to Chief Justice?
That would be just change the chairperson to Chief Justice.
Members, please take note of that one. Everybody have it?
I should just point out that we swapped the two paragraphs around.
Okay.
We changed the order, but it's not going to come anywhere.
Okay. Happy?
Okay.
All right, next, Mr.
Dunham. To page 17. And, Chair Wallace. Further reading of the policy, members will recall this issue. All the steps that the Commission might take if they decide not to refer to a tribunal. And there's that long provided the state shall not be responsible for any expenditure incurred as a result of the steps that will be executed. I think this is just a much more elegant way to phrase the whole thing and arrive at the same result by saying that the Commission may, subject to 79, impose any of or a combination of the middle of
17-9 is already that provided.
That is what the government provides.
Let me just check. 17-9. And then you've made reference to this section as well, Mr. Delande, in 17-9 or not 20, because that one is subject to 8EFG. They shall not be responsible for any expenditure as a result of so with any remedy referred to in section 8EFG, unless such remedy was from a list and so on. And here, what are we dealing with here? Here you're dealing with the tribunal, isn't it? And the commission finding that the person is not impeachable, but...
That is clear, too. The commission can impose all the same sanctions, but then it's obviously subject to the same limitation.
All you've done is you've replaced that whole thing with a reference to 17-9.
Just a subject.
Okay. I think that's right. Everybody happy? Okay.
Page 19 of the document, Chair. That's the rules and the procedure provision. That's now closed in. As an option, members will recall at the last meeting the discussion was around whether the Chief Justice must make rules or whether the Chief Justice should just make rules. my group, and yes, I think many people would like to go through this provision.
Yeah, look, I think the discussion there was, you've got a, where is it that it says by a certain date the rules must be done? Where is that?
It will now be in the
first rules under this section must be made within 6 months of the date of the commencement of the section. Now, it doesn't help to say that the first rules must be made within 6 months, and then you say the Chief Justice may make rules, if you will. So that's why that option is there, in the sense that we expect, because the worst thing that can happen, it seems to me, look, for all intents and purposes, my view is that we'll never get to this point, hopefully, that people will resign before we get to a tribunal. But the worst possible case scenario is that you get to a tribunal stage and there are no rules and procedures have been formulated prior to that happening. And my feeling is that we must have these rules in place, whether or not we're ever going to have a tribunal at some point at the stage. But those rules and procedures must be in place should there ever be need of a tribunal. And my feeling is that we must say must, and that we must give a specified amount of time. It may even be that 6 months is too short. We remember initially the clause said 4 months. And we now extended it to 6 months. What are people's views on this matter?
If we go with the month, then maybe we should make it a bit longer. But I'll bear in mind that it was 4 months. Doesn't really know the fact that the Chief Justice has been in what time that we need to get the justice court. Maybe we can consider making it a bit longer for those times.
Remember, the issue of capacity is not the only issue involved here. I mean, the one problem that you want to avoid, of course, is that you don't want it to be so long that something happens in the meantime. So, look, I mean, these things have, I'm sure that they are already, you know, discussions about some of these things. And my feeling is that even if they aren't, 6 months is a hang of a lot of time. I mean, we draft and pass legislation within 3 months, 4 months. With this regulation is relating to a procedure, and they'll probably draw from other people.
Confirm which version is now going to be issued?
It's the must make rules,
mm-hmm.
And then we provide for the time period 6 months. So it's your option is
okay.
The number. Okay? Happy? All right. Next
page is just to cross references.
I must tell you, Mr. DeLanga, before I forget to do this, and I know that I don't need to tell you guys to do it anyway, but you know we have to say another word, but very big problem with the special offenses legislation in principle. Members, I don't know if you're aware or not, but what happened when we passed the special offenses, you recall we had interest here and is quite, it's quite thick. What's happened is that they changed the electronic version of the bill to the census by a petition. It was formatted and it, all these people needed to do was to print. It came back with something like almost 200 technical mistakes on the printed version. We then had to sit all night, because remember we had the 3 days before we went to bed. They sat all night on the first night and part of the second day to fix up and identify, because there were technical things, cross-references, things where, you know, the sentence starts there and suddenly it starts there or there kind of thing, and it just changes the flavor of what you get. So they sat and they with the fine tooth comb and they sorted all of that stuff out. They send another version and it comes back to the National Assembly now with another about 60 odd mistakes. New mistakes, not old, new ones. Apparently we have consultants who print our material. So in a sense, the effect of that is that we pass the wrong version of the book because of all of these technical mistakes. And the NPOP is going to have to come back with recommendations, like formal recommendations to all those technical mistakes. So the one thing we don't want to do is to have this kind of problem. And I don't know how we solve it, but I'm quite sure that you're going to send this thing, it's going to come back with it. That's my second sense. I'm told that these people's contract is coming to an end, so they couldn't care less what they're doing without printing. But anyway, we had discussions with the Secretary to the Parliament, and we've alerted them to this problem. But it seems to me that the explanation we get is that these people are consultants and their contract is coming to an end, and Parliament has indicated that they're not renewing their contract. And so this kind of shoddy job can happen. I hope we're not paying these people. But for our purposes, just be aware of that. So please, Mr. DeLango, we need to do it two or three. Rika as well. Oh, yes. Okay. So we're debating this thing in the house on Tuesday. I think it's a Tuesday. So you guys are gonna have to spend Monday to make sure that you've got a printed version and make sure that you stuff there and close them all night. Make sure. Yeah, I mean, it's really embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And it's not any fault of this committee or these people, because as I say, we go through, unlike other committees, we go through the final version. We don't say, okay, this is what we're going to do and leave it up to people, but we actually do it. And so, we send the right version if things go wrong. It's just the most hopefully, in my lifetime, we'll put it. So, sorry, I interrupted you. You were pointing out to other rate transfers, Mr. DeLanga.
I think you can see the next transfer is not really on page 23. It forms part of clause 35, the regulations clause. And in page 23, we have the top member will note that we've added a new Roman 2. That means that the other one must change to 3. I will note the effect that. Next that. And it relates to, members will recall the discussion that the regulation should also make provision for a manner in which the judge should apply for the written consent of the minister.
Yeah, so Mr. Landis will point to the member of our application. Now that Mr. Landis is going to reconsider. No, I think you supported it, and so did most members. I disagree, but I mean, you know, what does that matter? I'm just going up to them. No, that's fine. Thanks, Mr. Bellin.
Even at the bottom of the same page, in new section 37, we just deleted also on the committee. There was a provision that the executive should provide support to the agent of charge of the executive board. Considering what that's really not contributing.
Good.
Then on the next page, in section 37, seeing that sub 3 is very new, that is the registrar. It was thought inappropriate to refer to a judge designated by the Chief Justice, because that person will act as the Chief Justice. And the Chief Justice can't even get that. suggested that we say maintain the register of trust of the register of registrable interest.
You said such a word as registrable. I tried to look for it on my spell check yesterday.
See, when you pass the floor, there will be.
New inroads, new patents.
Is that the judge is a judge for life, even if he's dismissed, discharged from active service. You will recall that that was not the opinion or interpretation of Judge Kushler and others that that were before the committee. And I do not think it would, I think it is much more safe rather to have this exception as a as of a right built into the act than to it can do no harm whatsoever than to try and regulate the basic professional activities of discharged judges. Thank you, Chair.
Have people got copies of it? Okay. May I then? I want you to read it out. Oh, have you got copies? Let me read it out for those of you who don't have copies. It says, basically, the 11.2 will be amended to read as follows. A judge who has been discharged from active service, A, may, after having informed the chief justice in writing for financial gain, 1, hold office or as or perform services of a judicial or quasi-judicial nature, or be involved in legal research, legal publications, and legal education, B, may only with the written consent of the minister, I'm not quite sure what that means. Then you continue where we got, may with the written consent of the minister, which may only be given if the minister is satisfied,
in other words, it's
but this is a more restrictive, surely. Maybe I'm not understanding.
No, that it means, the effect is a judge, a discharged judge, discharged from active service, will be, as of right, be entitled to do those
things. Do these things without permission.
Without permission, but must inform the Chief Justice.
No, I don't know that. I read it something in a different way. I read it almost as if these are the two categories they may perform, and then they need permission as stipulated, which I thought was a little more restrictive than what we're doing. Because what we're saying is it doesn't matter what they do. As long as the following criteria doesn't exist, then permission may be granted. So everybody got that. It's giving them, as of right, the two categories of work that they may perform. They only need to inform, and they don't need permission. That's it. Mr. Jeffrey?
I mean, the restriction is only if it's for financial gain. So, I mean, obviously, it would be good for judges to be involved in legal research, legal publications, and legal education. They only have to, either as it's written at the moment, get the consent of the minister, or as Delport raises, inform the Chief Justice if it's for financial gain. Now, I still have the problem that if you're paying a judge a salary, why must they, and I think this is where it would go, the right to earn a livelihood. They're already earning a livelihood. I think it's good for judges to be involved in legal research, legal publications, and legal education. But why must they get paid? And as it is at the moment, I think he's got permission. Judge Davis is teaching quite a full load at UCT. He's not being paid for it. He does it because he likes it. Why can't that be the case by the judges? And if they do want to get paid, if they do want an associate, a honorary professorship, well, honorary is not for money, if they do want a professorship at a university, get them approached to the minister. Why must they get paid for it? Twice. So that's my worry. So what I really want to point out is that, look, they can, as the thing is worded at the moment, they can be involved in writing articles and things like that, and writing books, provided they don't get paid. They can do that on their own without asking the minister. My other worry is holding office or performing services of a judicial or quasi-judicial nature, with Dr. Delport's proposal of having that as a sort of right where they just have to give information. You know, the public, they keep the title of the judge, and the public can get confused. So Anglo can decide if they're going to appoint retired Judge X to investigate something. And the public sort of see it as a sitting judge. Okay, they can do it for free now anyway, as it's worded. But I think my basic problem is, why must they get paid twice? If they say, look, I'm happy to forgo my salary, fine. But why must they get two salaries? And I don't think it's conflicting. So that's basically my concern. I mean, here the other issue would be, I don't know what the rest of the committee would feel, is that, I mean, it's we're wanting to vote on the bill, it's quite late. I mean, maybe Dr. Delport, if we reject it, could look at having it proposed in the NCOP when there's more time to consider it. But as I said, my gut problem, and I'm repeating myself, sorry, is they're getting paid. Why must they get another salary? Why must they have a right to another salary?
I don't know why you're encouraging Dr. Delport to go to the NCOP when you want to reject it. No, look, you can't be that, please. Don't try, is what I'm saying. That's the man. Joke station, joke. No, I'm going to first give Mr. Mangwanesh, let him discuss it. If there's a second and so on, then we'll discuss the possibility of voting on it as well. Even if you, I mean, let's see. I mean, you may want this opportunity to convince people. I don't think that happens so often in this committee, actually. Oh, I see. But in this committee, you've won quite a few, actually, now that I think about it. Go ahead, Mr. Mangwanesh. Except when they like, you know, really bad.
Mr. Margaret,
sorry.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I think that the first issue that I must raise is that if the ANC will have a different position now than currently changed. Even our caucuses agreed with the bill as it is. That is point number one. Point number two, you see, the issue of legal research, issue related with aid for financial gain, it can also mean that even SM of Athens can say, do this research for us on interception and monitoring, and we pay you so much money. So the implication of this amendment proposed by the Capital Court is that it makes whatever we have done to be of no consequence at all. Immediately you agree to this. So, Chairperson, I think that the ANC will not vote for, will not agree to the Capital Court's amendment.
Chair, I have sympathy for Dr. Delport's view, but I do appreciate that there are countervailing views as well, so it's a balance of different interests and rights, but we will support his view in this regard. Thanks.
I think the one, I must say I misread this thing. I thought that initially what you were going to say is that they can do these things and they still need consent, in which case, you know, that was still something that we could have considered, because what it does is narrow the perspective to particularly this. Because the one thing, I mean, I don't want to go on record and talk about what has happened recently and so on, but the one thing that it does show is that the potential for conflict of interest is so easy when it comes to judges. And we mustn't forget, as much as we are legislating for now, which is the point that we made during the public hearings as well, much as we are legislating for now, and now we know that judges who are not active or being discharged from active service don't actually have to fulfill their obligations of serving on the bench for 3 months and so on, because of the impediments of trying to get new blood into the judiciary and so on. But that's not always going to be the case. It's not always going to be the case that people who are discharged are not going to be recalled to the bench. And I think that that's really the big issue. Is to what extent do you narrow the person's possibility of sitting on the bench as a serving judge for at least 3 months a year if the person is a director or something, or a director of a legal firm, sitting on the board of a big corporate legal firm, or sitting in arbitration, all kinds of matters. So my sense is, and clearly Mr. Ganesh has set the parameters within which we've now got a mandate. We took the matter to our caucus this morning, in fact, and the position was endorsed. And so it's going to be very difficult for us to, at this stage, change our view. And certainly, in terms of the basic principles to which we sold these arguments, it's not going to fly, even if we could take it to our caucus. I think JJ has captured why it is that we went for two. The one thing that I think that you've raised here that perhaps we haven't fully spoken to, although I think we have, but if you look at what we've done in one when it comes to active judges, we said that they can do the royalties and legal books and stuff like that. And they must receive the consent of the minister acting in consultation with the Chief Justice. And the reason for that is clearly the Chief Justice is the head of the judiciary and these are serving judges, and so the link between the minister and the Chief Justice is almost in one sense they both have an equal interest in the administration of justice. When it comes to those discharged from active service, we said after consultation, not in consultation. And the reason there was that the link then between them and the Chief Justice becomes a little more tenuous than those actively serving on the bench. But the one area I think that could possibly be amended is that issue. And maybe make it uniform and say it's always in consultation. The minister makes that decision, because it could be that what you're then providing for is an opportunity for convincing or somebody to speak on behalf of these judges who are discharged from active service. It may be something that one could think about doing. If not now, then perhaps at the end. Mr. Dalpo, do you want to come in at this stage?
Then we can put the in-consultation on. I'm easy on that one.
Yeah, I'm saying it's not part of your proposal per se.
No, but
you also said, you know, the Chief Justice has to be informed. So I see you kept the link that way.
In any event, whether you accept or reject by in-consultation.
Because I don't think that's going to be a train commission in any case. But my suggestion is, I think it's something that perhaps the legal drafters can communicate to the NCOP at the stage that this thing goes to them, to say that perhaps one of the things that we could consider is the Oh, I don't think it will be before the NCOP this year. It will only go to them at the end, well, probably early next year. Okay, so that's the position as far as we're concerned. Can we then,
on procedure,
yes.
If we get our mandate before we have finalized or before we
approve something, isn't there a contradiction then we can't change it because we have a mandate?
I don't think what Mr. Magwaneshi is saying necessarily is that we can't change it because we have a mandate. what we're saying is, in essence, is even if we could go back to our caucus, we're not convinced that it will hold in terms of the principles that you guys want to apply, given the reasons that Mr. Jeffrey and the whole discussion that we had. I mean, the truth of the matter is there has to be some mechanism, because as we explained to you, one of the problems, for example, in terms of arbitration, if, and I'm not saying it happens, I'm saying if it happens, but in a particular jurisdiction, every civil matter goes to arbitration, nothing goes to the High Court. That affects the standing of those judges, because they're not developing the expertise. That affects the standing of the administration of justice in this country in a material respect. Now, that's why we can't agree in principle to an automatic right to do any work, because of the potential of impact it may have on your administration of justice going forward. One of the reasons many of the judges are sought after, because let's be frank, this matter is about arbitration work, but nothing more, it's about arbitration work. One of the reasons why our judges are so sought after is because they've had the kind of experience, and they've been exposed to the kind of experience in the courts. And so people feel a sense of confidence in their ability. Now, if you have suddenly got judges who are sitting in our courts and all of these matters are being diverted away from the courts, you're not actually, you know, capacitating people on the bench for the future. And that's really, I think, a matter of policy. And so to give people automatic rights and take away the possible flexibility that this mechanism can then be used to prevent such things happening and so on, is for us indeed a huge problem. I hope that explains some of why it is that we've gone the way we have. I think we're on record in any case in our discussion process. But as I say, we won't, on the issue of in and out and so on, I'm happy, you know, if it goes to the NCOP and they then propose that we do a similar thing, because I think it may be a possibility that we can agree to that. But I don't think we'll ever, even if it goes to the NCOP, I don't think we can ever agree to what you're proposing. Okay, so let's then, anybody else want to raise anything? Let's then go through the formal process of just putting the bill.
Sorry, Steve, I have to do the amendment first.
Did you want to vote on the amendment first? Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine. You want to propose formally? Second? Okay. Those in favor of Dr. Delport's motion to amend, I don't know what you call it, amendment. Three, those against, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, no, it's not there. You have not to struggle at counting. Okay. So the motion is not carried, or the amendment is not carried. Okay? The report. Can we now put the bill as it stands, with the Section 11 as it stands? Do I need to read out the motion of desirability? We have to change that. Okay. Motion of desirability that, in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to amend the Judicial Service Commission Act 1994 so as to establish the Judicial Conduct Committee to receive and deal with complaints of our judges, to provide a code of conduct of judicial provide a code of judicial conduct which serves as the prevailing standard of judicial conduct which judges must adhere to provide the establishment and maintenance of a register of judges' rights and interests, provides the procedure for dealing with complaints about judges. It provides the establishment of judicial conduct tribunals to inquire into and report on allegations of incapacity, gross incompetence, or gross misconduct against judges, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Can I have somebody who moves the motion? Mr. Sibanyone, seconder, Mr. Swart. Those in favor? Unanimous. Those against, none. Those who are saying none. Okay, so that's it. There was some discussion about us adopting a report. You recall that one of the issues that we wanted to do was to suggest that the Deputy Chief Justice, who is not a member of the JSC, but the Constitution requires that should the Chief Justice not be available, the Deputy Chief Justice chairs. And we thought that that was untenable given the fact that the person is not even a member of the JSC. It was that kind of issue. The issue around the COP. You recall one of the big debates that we've had here around things like the regulations being passed only in the NMA and not in the National Council of Provinces was because there is a dichotomy. On the one hand, they sit on the JSC and they must recuse themselves for all matters other than appointments, just as members of the NMA do. But in fact, it's only the NMA that has anything to do with the impeachment of a judge. And so one of the things that we had discussed is the possibility of a report around that, asking the department to look at those issues. Unfortunately, I've only just got the report now, and I wanted to just look at it and discuss it with your highness on. My suggestion is that we possibly pass this report only once it comes back from the NCOP, and once we have a session here, assuming there are changes. Even if there are no changes, we can still do a report to say we approve whatever changes the NCOP is presenting to us, and we want to pass the report. Would that be in order with you, as opposed to doing it now? We were to make those suggestions and they're not happy with implementing it, there's no point. So I think let's get all those ducks in a row. Let's also consult the minister on some of these matters, get her views, and then if people feel that that's the way to go, we'll try to persuade. And if they feel that's the way to go, I think that's when we pass the report, because otherwise it's going to be passing a report for a report's sake. It's not going to help them. Nothing will change. And these things are delicate because the JSC is a delicate balance. The NCOP story is also a delicate balance. And it will require constitutional amendment, of these things. That's why I put it in the report. So that's why I'm saying, rather let's wait, let's discuss. We haven't had an opportunity to even raise it with the minister. And the last thing I want is for her to ask the past report and then she gets to know about it. We've not even had that opportunity. It's just been a bit of a mess with me moving to another committee and then staying over here. Things have just fallen off our plates, so to speak. And this with one cell tissue. Okay? So, yes, I want to just suggest that the ALC members remain behind. Thank you very much. The debate, I take it, is on Tuesday. I'm not sure if we know how many minutes. Okay. This is a bit of a more substantial issue than the Judicial Education Institute, and so I think we would need some time to debate it. I know that the opposition has also put in a motion to ask to debate the issue of judicial accountability and so on. This clearly is an opportunity to do so. So I take it that we will have a significant apparently that's not such a long debate, it's a short debate. The bill is not very substantive in nature, but obviously the consequences are major in the sense that transformation is one of the three prongs of transformation that we've been working for a long time. And that sense is a major implication. The bill itself is.
Sorry to interrupt, just one issue of clarification. I did prepare a memorandum on the object. The rules require you to write your report, to also report the memorandum. I don't know if you want to look at it formally or whether you want to look at it formally.
Let me have a look. Don't we just then say that we looked at the report, we looked at the bill, we proposed it with changes, and then what is this thing for?
Also,
this comes as the back of
also the report approved the object memorandum of the bill, the original one, which in this case would be the issue of the bill of 2001, or an amended object memorandum.
Okay, so can we then put this object to this committee and then approve?
Agree with what?
Yeah, okay. I think maybe this could be that. I don't think it's. Oh, it's already been.
Are you referring to your joke that you made earlier, Chair?
Hey, my joke is very I'm Republican.
But you're a lawyer?
I'm
a lawyer. So you're a lawyer, you said when lawyers make jokes, I'm saying that you're a lawyer.
Yeah, that's what
you're
thinking.
It is from like it's from Nigeria. And obviously from Nigeria, the name is Chief and from Australia.
Okay.
And Liza comes from Nigeria.